Mr. Catt.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. The issue in this case is whether when a state acts to reinstate an old but properly filed petition for post-conviction relief, that act, which undoes the final resolution of that petition, means that we should treat the petition as pending from the time when it was originally filed until the ultimate final resolution following that reinstatement. Following his conviction, Mr. De Jesus filed such a petition with the Illinois Circuit Court, which everyone recognizes that the Illinois Circuit Court improperly dismissed in 1991 and compounded the problem by directing him to apply to appeal to the Illinois Supreme Court when that appeal should have been taken to the Illinois Appellate Court. In 2006, the Appellate Court reinstated that petition, as the state has conceded, and in doing so, undid the final resolution of that petition. That final resolution then ultimately came on January 24, 2007, when the Illinois Supreme Court denied the petition for leave to appeal. The end result, then, is that the petition was first filed in 1991, and final resolution came in 2007. It was only at that time that Mr. De Jesus had received the first full round of state appellate proceedings on that petition. As a result, his properly filed petition should be understood as pending.
But then there's no deadline, is there, on your view?
I'm not sure I understand, Your Honor. Deadlines in which respect?
Well, on your view, he could wait as long as he wanted after 91.
The key is that I guess the answer is yes, in that if the state should choose years later to reinstate the petition, then, you know, it's up to the state court to decide that. If it's too late for the state and they decide that they aren't willing to reinstate it, then, you know, there'd be no basis for arguing that it'd be pending during that time period.
Why should the state court's decision control access to a federal court?
I think generally, Your Honor, that...
Why not apply just an ordinary tolling analysis and ask whether anything happened that would justify his delay?
In the case of whether something is properly filed and pending under 28 U.S.C. 2244D, this court and in particular the Supreme Court have focused on what the state court does. This court has said that it is the state court's determination. It is up to state law whether something is properly filed.
And of state law, but I don't understand why it affects federal law. Suppose a state says you can file a collateral attack on a judgment in our courts at any time between now and the end of the universe. And the prisoner waits 20 years, files a collateral attack in state courts. It's timely as the state construes timeliness. The state denies it on the merits. Your position seems to be that that opens a new window to file in federal courts, and I don't understand why, since there was nothing pending in the intervening 20 years and the federal period expired at the end of year one. Isn't that perfectly straightforward?
Your Honor, the critical thing here is the act of reinstatement and the fact and the Supreme Court's recent decision in Jimenez, which, although dealing with a different part of the statute, focuses on
a different part of the statute. The Supreme Court says in Jimenez that if the state grants the petition, then there's a new federal period because it's effectively reopened the case. But in your case, and in the case I gave, the state court denied the petition. One would think that's all the difference in the world. That was the very thing Jimenez turned on.
So
I'm trying to figure out why we don't have the natural reading that if there's nothing pending in state court for a year, the federal time expires, even if the state, for its own purposes, has no period of limitations for filing collateral attacks.
Well, the critical thing, I think, is that although the state court ultimately denied the petition, it did so by hearing the substantive merit.
Yes, that's my hypothetical. The state has no time limit for collateral attacks, as indeed the federal courts didn't until 1996. And so if you file a collateral attack in state court, in my hypothetical, it will be decided on the merits, and it might be either granted or denied. If it's granted, we know from Jimenez what happens to the federal time limit. What you say is that even if it's denied, the federal time limit restarts. And that's why I'm trying to figure out why that would be so.
If it's denied on the merits, because the only way to understand that the period of time during which it's passed is under the United States Supreme Court's decision in Kerry, we understand that what you and I might think of as sort of the ordinary meaning of pending, namely that something is, you know, before a court for active consideration, is not in fact what pending means in 2244D. The conclusion that has to be taken from that, it means as long as something is in continuation or that a petition is pending until the final resolution by the state court of that petition.
Well, it sounds like pending. I don't understand why.
It's not a sensible understanding of pending, but at least if that's what you believe, what you're saying is that there is no federal time limit for filing a collateral attack in any state that does not have a state time limit for filing a collateral attack. Because since you can file in such a state at any time, the federal court will proceed as if there were always a state proceeding pending.
No, I think the difference here is that there was something filed prior to the time when the period began.
But that's why I'd like you to fit your analysis, if you can, to some ordinary principle about tolling, right? So if with due diligence you can't file within the statutory limit, then you're allowed to extend it, right? So is there some way in which you can relate the denial of his or the mishandling of his petition to a tolling argument?
I think that we should take the Illinois Appellate Court's action, which reinstated the petition, as basically determining that petition had been hanging around since 1991, although it certainly is likely that had Mr. De Jesus come to federal court in 1999 or 2002, the federal court would have said, you know, you're out of luck here. But I think we can understand from Jimenez that doesn't have to be determinative, and that because the state appellate court says, look, the state screwed up, this should never have been dismissed this way, we're going to reinstate we're listening to it here.
But what difference does it make to him whether it's dismissed on a plausible ground or dismissed as a screw-up? Why should that affect his deadline for suing?
I think there's a sense of deferring to the state court and having some... Well, first of all, the analysis under Kerry is that he should have, you know, the first full crack at the procedures in the state court before... And that's all part of the, you know, whether those remedies have been exhausted before he comes to federal court anyway. But he was deprived of that in the sense that he wasn't told to apply to the correct court. He should have had his petition docketed and considered on the merits and, you know, not dismissed in summary fashion. And because that didn't occur, he was deprived of the full benefit of those proceedings. I see that I'm into my rebuttal time, and I'd like to reserve it.
Certainly, Mr. Kent. Ms. O'Connell.
May it please the Court, Erin O'Connell on behalf of the respondent warden. Petitioner's proposed rule allowing retroactive tolling is untenable as a matter of law, as its application to the facts of his case clearly demonstrates. This petitioner had no petition or motion pending on any state or federal docket for a period of 9 years. It cannot be the purpose of AEDPA's tolling provision to excuse 9 years of unexplained delay. As petitioner has conceded, under his theory, there is simply no deadline whatsoever for his filing of a federal petition because some future state action can somehow undo the effect of all that's taken place in the past.
Sounds like his position is that the federal deadline comes and goes. If he had filed a petition in 1999, it would properly have been dismissed as untimely.
True.
But then the federal deadline went away because after the federal time had expired, he filed a state petition.
That can't be the case, though, where the issue is the pendency
of a... That would require us to overrule quite a lot of our cases.
Right. That doesn't fit under the pendency of a collateral state proceeding. Jimenez doesn't support that either. Jimenez dealt only with the issue of finality in terms of a state conviction. And under that case, there are, in essence, two dates on which the statute of limitations would have started to run. The first was the date of his conviction without the filing of the appeal. That period could have run in 365 days. Then Jimenez says, well, actually, there's a second date, too. If you reopen a direct appeal, at the conclusion of that appeal, that new judgment is a new trigger for Section 2244D1A. Therefore, Jimenez restarted the clock at zero. And it doesn't square with pendency as opposed to finality. In fact, under Jimenez, it distinguished between pendency and finality, albeit implicitly. It didn't address the issue directly because it never even cited to the tolling provision in its reasoning. However, the court stated that by reopening the direct appeal, the state court restored the pendency of petitioner's appeal of his conviction. If you use the language restored dependency, that means that at some point dependency ended. And by restoring it, you have restarted dependency as of the date on which the state court has done this, has issued its ruling that allows further proceedings. Another issue I'd like to address is that pendency is a matter of federal law. This court treated it as such in Fernandez. Petitioner is correct in that whether a collateral attack is properly filed is determined by state law. However, whether a petition is pending is determined by federal law. So in Fernandez, this court construed the meaning of the phrase of the term pending and said that it can't mean it can't be the case that something is pending when there is nothing active on a docket. There is a distinction where it's become final and is resuscitated. Pending cannot cover the period in which nothing was active on the docket. Another mistake that petitioner makes is in reading of Carey and Evans. Carey and Evans cannot be taken to mean that there are only two possibilities for the status of a collateral attack. He reads Carey to mean that an attack is either pending because there remains further avenues for review, or it's become final. However, Carey itself contemplated the situation of the untimely filing of an appeal. Doesn't fit under either of the phrasings used by petitioner. And in that third situation, that is identical to what this court considered in Fernandez. The third situation is it's become final, but is possibly resuscitated.
In which case it wasn't final.
And then the final point I'd like to address is that in this case, the state court committed an error. Concededly. However, that error didn't impede petitioner at all from filing his federal petition. After the state court committed its error, petitioner could have gone the next day and filed his federal petition. Nothing precluded him from doing so. At that point, he would even have exhausted his state court remedies. Therefore, this error is simply not relevant in terms of determining when his federal petition should have been filed. Does the court have any further questions?
Doesn't look like it.
We would ask that the court affirm the judgment of the district court.
Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Catt?
I just wanted to clarify a couple of things. First, it is not true that the law is that. So it is true that federal law determines what is pending, and the Supreme Court has said that something is pending if it has achieved final resolution after one complete turn of the state's proceedings. That does not mean, and it's explicitly said so in Carey, contrary, in fact, arguably to what this court had found in Fernandez earlier, that there needs to be something pending for active consideration before the court. And there needs to be something on file on the docket or under active consideration by the court for there to be something pending. That isn't the law under Carey. and that isn't required here. For the same reason, I would suggest that there isn't any precedent of this court that would require overruling. I've sort of addressed Fernandez, but in addition, none of those other cases involved the state reinstating something that had been properly filed prior to the original timeline and clearly recreating that petition. But finally, I just want to emphasize that the problem would be similar in Jimenez in the sense that something has to – we have to be able to describe – there has to be some description applicable to the time period that after the state court changes its mind. How will you describe the period that has passed during which previously there may not have been anything that was final? And there's no suggestion in Jimenez about one judgment and then a second judgment, which the state has mentioned in its brief. It's really about the fact that there was a conviction, then there was no longer a conviction, then there was a conviction again. And whatever may have happened before, the only sensible understanding of that in our case would be that if it wasn't final, it had to have been pending during that time. I would just ask that the court remand, and thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Katt. We appreciate your willingness to accept the appointment and your assistance to your client and the court alike.